You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
The Earth Station 1 podcast has been bringing your inner geek out to play for the past 13 years. Over this time, you've seen things change in the world of geek and podcasting alike.
And your friends here at ESO are looking to change also. We are now giving you double the fun by coming to you twice a week, and not just in audio, but now you can see our lovely faces up on YouTube.
Join Mike and Mike as we celebrate our 700th episode and beyond. Earth Station 1 is proud to be a founding member of the ESO Network.
Evidently, you do not realize you are in an interstellar conveyance. You are already outside the atmosphere of your own planet.
Monster attack! Monster attack! Monster attack! Monster attack!
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Monster Attack, the podcast dedicated to old monster movies. And we have got a fun one for you this week. Yeah, the voice is almost back completely. The ragweed is starting to subside. And I appreciate all your patience with my raspy voice these last few weeks. It's always a rough time of year down here in Georgia when the ragweed goes wild. But anyway, like I said, we've got a fun one for you this week. And it comes courtesy of Mr. B.I.G. No, we're not talking about the rapper. We're talking about Mr. Burt I. Gordon, one of our favorites here at Monster Attack. And this one falls in line with another film that we discussed with Mark Maddox and Clay Sayre a number of months ago called Food of the Gods, which was loosely, and I say very loosely, based on an H.G. Wells short story. This one is also very, very loosely based on an H.G. Wells short story called Empire of the Ants. And of course, in all of the promotional material for the film when it came out, it prominently displayed H.G. Wells' Empire of the Ants. And we're going to tell you how there may be some similarities between that and the short story. But, as we know from Burt, he's a good showman. He likes to spin it a little bit when it comes to the marketing. But this was a wild, wild film when it came out. I had just gotten out of college the year before. I was living down here in Georgia. I actually lived down here in Georgia from about 1978 to 1980. I had a short stint where I lived in New York City trying to find fame or fortune, and that didn't go very well. That's another podcast, a story for another podcast, or maybe a panel at a convention or something. So I was seeing a lot of movies in multiplexes during this time period. I was living in Little Rome, Georgia. And working in an hourly job for 7-Eleven. And so when these films came out, this one came out in one of the little multiplexes that was literally right around the corner from the house I was living in. So I got to see a lot of fun movies like this. And, it's everything that you thought it would be. Of course, as I've told you before, I was a big Burt I. Gordon fan, still am, thinking the world of him. This was not quite the last film he made, but he would make Food of the Gods after this one. But this is near the end of where he's sort of wrapping things up in his illustrious film career. And folks, I'm not going to try to convince you that this is a great film. It's just a hell of a lot of fun. And it's one of those that, I will sit down and watch from time to time and just have a good time. After I went back to school in 1979, I got together with some of the friends that I'd gone to high school with in Raleigh and some who had also attended UNC. We were heavily into CBS Late Night. And this is a film that I think owes a lot to CBS Late Night for the cult status that it has derived over the years. And that did pretty well in the theater. When it came out in 1977, and a lot of us saw it in the little B-style theaters then, it on its first release recorded $2.5 million. Now, I couldn't get exact figures on what the budget was for this film, but, knowing Burt, a lot of his films usually fell, I would say, at this time in the late 70s, probably around the $100,000 to $150,000 range. That would be my guess. So it did well. I mean, you know, that was a good return. And then $2.5 million in 77 was a pretty good haul. Of course, then it would slow down, make the drive-ins and all of that. But boy, when VHS came out, this film was gangbusters. And a lot of it was because of its appearance on CBS Late Night. And it made a ton of appearances on Late Night. This was when I was really surprised. It seemed like every time I turned around, they were running Empire of the Ants. I would say it would get 4 or 5 showings a year. It was just one of those fun movies about giant ants. And of course, now Bert had refined some of his special effects techniques. We no longer had like ants crawling up a photograph or anything like that. He actually had some pretty good little miniatures that he made in this film. We'll tell you about that as we're going along the storyline. We'll tell you a little bit about some of that. He used a Panamanian bullet ant. So they're fairly large ants to begin with. And then he used blown up versions of them on film that he superimposed in on the action. It was a rough way, you know, to sort of superimpose ants on real footage. But, you know, it looked pretty good. You know, I remember in 77 seeing it, you know, saying, it's not bad. You know, it's not bad. And then he used puppetry for when the ants actually attacked the humans that we'll see in the movie here. Now, one of our stars of the film, Joan Collins, and of course, you know, Bert always had his ringers that he put in there. Joan was one of his bigger stars that he put in there. He paid her $45,000. So Joan was one that Bert was really, really counting on to bringing in a lot of people. Now, at this time, this is pre-Dynasty. You know, most of you my age and younger think of Joan Collins as being the big, you know what, in Dynasty for all the seasons. She was in the entire run of the series. But at this time, see, Joan had an interesting career where she did a lot of films in the early 70s and late 60s in the United States for 20th Century Fox. But she became very, very disillusioned with the whole studio system here in the United States. So she went back to Great Britain. And there she became known for, light sort of sexual comedies and that sort of thing. These were definitely drive-in type fare, like Alfie Darling, The Bawdy Adventures of Tom Jones, things of that nature. And of course, she had developed quite a reputation, not only from her early American appearances, but sort of a cult following from some of these other body type movies that she was known for. So this was a perfect timing for Bert to bring her into this film and promote it. Now, the interesting thing about the marketing for Empire of the Ants, again, this is pre-Dynasty, but when Empire hit the VHS market, and of course, I mean, it was totally resurrected. It had gotten all that big play on CBS Late Night. And then when I remember when the videos hit the video stores, it said a dynasty of ants. So they very, very clearly used the word dynasty in the packaging and the marketing for this film. So, you know, Bert was no fool. He knew Joan was going to be a big draw. And the other big draw that he brings in, oh, by the way, Joan plays a very sleazy character in this, which would go along with the character she played in Dynasty. She is like a scam artist, with a real estate, scam, lower than a used car salesman, if you ask me. Plays Marilyn Freiser is her name. And she's taking this group on a tour to try to sell them property in the Florida Everglades. Yeah. Now, we got some swampland we want you to take a look at. It's going to be a great investment. And we're going to tell you about that in just a second. The other big ringer, getting to that now, I'm getting all sidetracked. I really have fun with this film, folks. You can tell from my excitement. I really have a kick out of this film. Robert Lansing was brought in to play Dan Stokely. Now, Robert's character in this is he owns a large boat you know, sort of a luxury boat that he uses for a charter tours and that sort of thing. And Marilyn hires him to bring this group of possible investors out on a free tour of all this properties for sale. You know, and again, it's this typical property type stuff. It reminds me of one of those timeshare deals, meetings that I got fooled into going to years ago, and these vacation, you know, these shared vacation deals that, those scams became so popular back about, you know, back in the 90s, in late 80s, early 90s. And I remember getting sucked into one of those thinking I was going to actually get a free vacation to Florida. No, that didn't happen, you know, and any of you that have been at any of those meetings, they're high pressure, you know, strong arm you, they wouldn't let you out of the building until you made a commitment and signed a contract. And, yeah, well, luckily I didn't do any of those and didn't get stuck in any of those stupid timeshares. This is a similar type thing. So you've got a small group of people, and some of them are strictly there for the freebies. You know, it's a free trip to Florida and free food, you know, and this little tour, and you just pretend like you might invest, and then you take off. And there's an elderly couple that we'll meet in this group that it's a very, very small cast, but in this group that are doing that. They just, you know, they're retired, and all they do is take these free trips and these free tours that real estate people offer all the time. So gives you an idea of sort of the background of what's involved with this. So it's all surrounding this scam tour that Marilyn Freiser is giving. Now, Dan Stokely, our Robert Lansing's character, he's totally uninvolved with this, except that he strictly takes the people from one place to another. And the way they have to get to this, the quickest way is they go from one port, one little marina to another, you know, several miles away, because there's not very many roads that lead into this property. It's still undeveloped and rough. Although Marilyn makes sure that they show how they're going to lay out, where the pool is going to go, where the tennis courts are going to go, where the big country club is going to be, where the 18-hole golf course is going to be, and all that, you know, and it's all a scam. We find out that she wants people to sign 2-year contracts. They cannot sell the property for 2 years, because obviously the minute they put up the money, they're going to find out what a scam it is. So those are our first two ringers. And let's introduce you to some of the other people that you're going to see in this film. One guy, I'm going to save for the last year. John David Carson, guy you might recognize from a lot of television work. He's made a career out of that. This is one of his bigger film roles, and he is one of the major players in this. Plays a character by the name of Joe Morrison. But John actually started acting on stage under the name Johnny Carson. And this was out in L.A. So by the time he started making television appearances, it drew the attention of another Johnny Carson, who was not too pleased with this young, up-and-coming actor who was using his name. He was accused of trying to use the same name to help jumpstart his career. So I ended up having to change his name back to John David Carson. And that's probably the most interesting thing about his career that we're going to see here. Some of the other people that we're going to see on this tour are Jacqueline Scott. Jacqueline Scott was known probably more for Broadway, although she did a lot of low-budget film work and appeared in more than 100 television programs. So she's going to look familiar. And I remember when I first saw her in 77, it was like, man, I know that woman from somewhere. And then it was because she had done so many guest appearances on television shows. She plays a character by the name of Margaret Ellis. Margaret Ellis is one who had been an executive secretary for this rich industrialist for 20 some years, and then all of a sudden was let go. And, you know, she's got some money, and she's looking for investments, and she wants to start her own business. She wants to start a business that would be like a clearinghouse for household help, you know, like a maid service type thing. So she's on this tour to see if this is a good investment, if this is something that she can use to help build her money up to finance her business. Our next actress is Pamela Susan Shoup. She plays a younger woman in this. She appeared in a lot of films and television series that were created by Glenn A. Larson, because she got in good with Glenn. And so any television show that he produced, more than likely you would see Pamela on it, performing as either Pamela Susan Shoup or Pamela Shoup. I knew her best from the role of Halloween 2, the original one in 1981. Now, I saw her in this, so I didn't realize who she was then. But when I saw Halloween 2, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I remember that gal. She played a nurse in that, Nurse Karen Bailey. She falls under the a victim to Michael Myers in the hospital, where that, you know, that whole movie took place in the hospital. So that's probably one of the most recognizable roles for folks like me who were monster kids growing up around the time I grew up. Another person you're going to recognize quite a bit is Robert Pine. He made several television appearances, but he was on the entire run of Chips. He played the boss on Chips, and also just numerous television appearances. But one thing that some people might not know, but if you look closely at some of his earlier work, you'll see it. Robert Pine has a son who went on to a very successful career and currently is a big actor on the Hollywood scene. And he played James Kirk on the reboot of Star Trek, the one that was done by J.J. Abrams. So, yes, Chris Pine. He's Chris Pine's dad. I saw Robert show up in all kinds of things. A lot of like Dragnet, did a lot of cop shows, I guess, because of that got him into Chips. But he would make appearances on shows like Emergency and stuff. And he plays a real sleazeball in this one. I mean, he is a real sleazy character. His wife is there because she works for the real estate company that is putting this thing on. So his wife works for Marilyn Freiser. We get the idea that Larry Graham, that's his character's name, he's sort of a leech. It's obvious that the wife is probably supporting them both. We find in a couple of conversations he has with her, it's pretty much a loveless marriage on his point of view. He's always on the make. You know, so he's really attracted to Pamela Shoup's character, Corrine Bradford, because she's, you know, young, pretty single gal that's on this investment tour. And we really don't know her background, except that she's coming out of a bad marriage, because she does mention that when Larry puts the moves on her. Says, you know, look, I'm just coming out of one bad marriage. I don't need another one. So we really don't know much else about her character, except that she's starting over. And why she's on this tour, we're not really sure what her interest in it is. So, yeah, Larry is quite a character. And his wife in this is played by Brooke Palance. Now, she plays Christine Graham. And Brooke Palance, you're going to go, wow, that last name. Is it? It's like, oh, yeah. Brooke is the daughter of Jack Palance. She had a very short career and got married to Michael Wilding Jr. in 1982 and pretty much got out of the business after that. And, you know, still around. You know, and she's still around, but just doesn't do any acting anymore. But, you know, that is going to be her big claim to fame. Up until this point, she was making, you know, bit roles in movies like this and, you know, jump in on, you know, a few appearances on television and here and there. That was pretty much it. She has a bad time in this film. And we'll have to get into the timeline here so that we can tell you all about it. A couple more people want to tell you about. Harry Holcomb plays a character by the name Harry Thompson, and his wife is played by Irene Tedrow, who plays Velma Thompson. They are the elderly couple that I was making allusions to earlier. That they just basically go on these trips. They're retired and they take any free offer that they can get. You know, they love those things. Harry is best known for playing the grandfather on the old Country Time commercials in the 80s. Did that for almost 10 years. So he became quite well known, almost as well known as, you know, like the gal from Folgers and other people who made these permanent things. But he also will be known by an older crowd as being the doctor, you know, on a regular carrying appearance on Bonanza. So there's a couple more people that you're going to see quickly in this film that play our first victims. You're not going to probably recognize these people, but you've got Jack Coslin and Ilse Earle, who play Thomas and Mary Lawson. And they're going to be pretty much, they're going to be our first big, first big victims. Now, Jack appeared in a couple of Clint Eastwood films. So he's going to be known for them, for Magnum Force, Play Misty for Me, Outlaw Josie Wales, and Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. Obviously, a very good friend of Clint Eastwood, and those are going to be the highlights of his career. The gal that plays his wife, Ilse Earle, was in the business for quite a while, but she's basically going to be known for a lot of low-budget films. She did 19 films, and her biggest claim to fame was playing Mrs. Morris in the two Porky's films. She did have and Porky's Revenge. So she was in the three Porky's films. That's where she's going to be most recognizable for any of you that are fans of the Porky's franchise. But she did appear, and probably the biggest film she was in was an appearance as a nun in Absence of Malice. But she acted on and off in little jumping roles here and there right up until 2005, the year before she died. But she was mainly known for being a very good casting director. So she cast a lot of films, and she also produced one. So you know, known more for that than on the acting side. She was the associate producer on a film, Redemption. So, like I said, you know, Burt's got quite a collection of characters in this, and the film. And I don't mean this to be as a criticism, but the film plays like a made-for-TV film, maybe a little upscale, more than an ABC movie of the week. It just has that feel about it. Now, it moves very quickly, and you know, Burt, he wastes no time when it comes to his films. I mean, they just move. Now, one other guy I want to mention is the fellow who wrote the screenplay. Now, Burt came up with the idea. He came up with the actual storyline, but Jack Turley is the one who actually wrote the screenplay. And Jack was a veteran television writer, known for writing a lot of episodes of General Hospital, several episodes of The Fugitive, the 1963 Fugitive, and The Emperor, and then, of course, The Empire of the Ants, maybe the biggest film that he ever worked on. But Love Boat, Knots Landing, Vegas, a television series that I really liked called Salvage One that starred Andy Griffith and Richard Jekyll. I think a very underrated TV show, which I wish could have made it. It only lasted about a half a season before it got canceled. So, you know, you've got a nice group of people here, working on this film. And let's just get right into the storyline. I mean, we've given it to you a little bit so far here, in that this film deals with this scam operation. So we've got this real estate thing going on. This film reminds me a lot of 70s films that came out, like Airport, Towering Inferno, Earthquake, things of that nature, where you've got a collection of people. And so the first quarter of the film introduces you to them. And it's, I don't want to call it soap opera, but they all have their problems. Like Joe, the young fellow we were telling you about, he's lost his job. He's been divorced. He's behind on his alimony, that sort of thing. And we're not really sure, why he's on. I guess he's just trying to escape. And of course he gets attracted to Pamela Shoup's character, Corrine, and she's sort of, you know, feels sorry for him. And so we've got that couple sort of forming. And then we've got Robert Lansing's character, who's just sort of stuck there waiting for all these people to go through their tour. Dan, who draws the eye of Margaret, the one that was played by Jacqueline Scott. And, you know, you definitely can tell, you know, they're the two older folks in the group, probably other than the elderly couple. She's really got her eyes for them, and she makes the moves for him. And, you know, Joan Collins sort of has eyes for him a little bit because, I forgot to mention one other guy, and I should have, I can't believe I lost my note there on him, Edward Power. Edward is someone you're probably going to recognize, but not know where you recognize him from. He plays Charlie Pearson, and Charlie is like, the Girl Friday for Joan Collins's character, Marilyn. Biggest film he was in 1973, The Way We Were. He also was in Disclosure a couple of years, 20 years later, made appearances on several television shows, and, was a regular member on Melrose Place, and just, you know, jumped in and out of virtually every television show in the 80s. You can think of some of my favorites, like Buck Rogers in the 25th Century and The Incredible Hulk. He's got that look, and that, you know, you, so you're gonna say, man, I know this guy. I know him from somewhere, and more than likely, he showed up as a guest star or a jump in star on a television show that you watched on a regular basis. So we've got this tour getting ready to go with this group of people. But before we get to the tour, the beginning of this film, in typical Burt I. Gordon fashion, sort of tells us about ants. Of course, he wants to tell us about the ants. And he tells us about how ants communicate, you know, the intelligence of ants. And the queen ant can communicate with the other ants, with pheromones, in an obligatory manner. That's the word that they use, so that the ants, you know, have to obey, you know, almost like a hypnotic type situation. And that's going to come to play in this film, believe it or not, when we get further into the timeline here. So we've got our obligatory science film right in the beginning as we're getting the opening credits. And then we see medium-sized cargo ship out in the ocean, and they're unloading these 50-gallon drums off the back of the ship, or boat. Actually, more of a boat than a ship. And then we see the radioactive symbol on there, you know, big red and white 50-gallon barrels. Danger, toxic waste, radioactive waste, and they're just dumping them into the ocean. So Bert's making a statement here, and this whole film makes a huge statement about the dangers of radioactive waste and pollution, which sort of figured into Food of the Gods as well, if you think about it. So it's not real preachy, but it's definitely, you know, you're faced with it. Okay, this whole thing, where do these big ants come from? They come from radioactive waste. Because as he pans where this property is, before the folks get there, there's a couple of workmen working on the property, getting it ready for this big tour. You know, the big money tour that, you know, all these people are going to come buy all this land. In the distance is a barrel that has floated up on shore somehow, and it's leaking out all over the beach. But it's out of eyesight, direct eyesight of where they're going to be doing the tour. But then we see a close-up of it, and all these little ants going in and out of it. Oh, they're just having a good old time in that. And that sets the table for where these large ants came from. Okay, so now let's go on our tour. They've got this little, like, large golf course type, or I mean, golf cart type thing that they can take a lot of people in, that you see used in, you know, amusement parks and that sort of thing. And they go into the different areas. You know, Marilyn shows them where the golf course is going to be, and where the clubhouse will be, and all this stuff. And then some of the individual plots. They stop at one place so that the folks can walk around and check everything out. Of course, they've got food and booze and wine and everything. And our couple, the Lawsons, decide, you know, they go off on their own because Mr. Lawson, we find out, just, and this is, Bert is really great about telling you a lot about a character with, like, virtually no lines at all. they showed up at the original tour riding this little shuttle bus, in probably a shuttle bus from a motel or something. And he's writing something down in the white, and Irene's going, you know, what are you writing down? What are you writing down? And he goes, I'm keeping track of all of our expenses. This is supposed to be free. So I'm going to keep track of everything we spent to go on this thing so that we will get reimbursed. So that tells you everything you need to know about Mr. Lawson. So while the others are eating the food and talking, and this is a vehicle for us to find out a little bit more about their backgrounds and things of that nature. And virtually none of them are there to buy land. They're just there for the freebie stuff. Lawson, you know, sees that, you know, the whole thing's like a put on. You know, there's a fake water hydrant and water pipes that look like they're coming out of the ground ready for hookups and stuff. And they're just basically stuck into the ground. It's all a show. It's all, and he's on and on and on about it. He says, I don't trust anybody. You know, this is ridiculous, and I can't believe they conned us into this and all that. And all of a sudden, you hear this weird noise in the background, and here's where our first ant attack comes in, and they nail the Lawsons. So, first people to bite the dust, and we're going to see a few more here. You know, now it's one of those movies where it's like, okay, who in this group on this tour are going to survive this movie? And it's a great vehicle. I mean, it's so effective on films like this nature, or disaster films, or that sort of thing. Now, the other guys know that they realize that the Lawsons weren't there as they go on to the rest of the tour, but they figure they'll catch up with them later. And then all of a sudden, Margaret sees something off the trail. I mean, these are even roads. They're basically like dirt trails. Screams, and we don't see the bodies per se, but we just see the foot of what is obviously a corpse in the distance, right off the track, and it's the two workmen that we saw earlier in the film. So now everybody's panicking. They don't know what to do. Marilyn doesn't know, you know, what to do, but Charlie, who's, you know, her girl Friday, sort of, for lack of a better term, says, we need to get back to the boat. Dan agrees. He says, yeah, let's get back to the boat. We'll get you guys out of here. But Joe says, hey, wait a minute, what about the Lawsons? They're not here. We need to find them. Well, Larry's not going to do it. He's a coward. You know, he's like, hey, I'm not going anywhere near there, especially since you got two dead bodies right there in the woods. And now you want to go in the woods looking for somebody? And Harry, who's the older guy, he says, I'm an old man. I can't do it. But Corrine says, look, I'll go. I'll go with you. And, you know, because we know that Corrine's sort of got a thing now for Joe. She's, I don't know. You know, I think she's feeling sorry for him. But she's definitely got an attraction. He's sort of attracted to her as well. So they take off to go look for the Lawsons, and they find them, and they find the ants. And so now the race is on to get back to where the rest of the group are. They had to make a beeline back to the boat. There's going to be a lot of folks I skip over all over here, okay? So if it seems a little stilted, don't worry about it. I'm just sort of giving you the highlights, sort of the thumbnail. Now, the rest of the guys are back there at the boat, and to their shock, they're looking at the dock, you know, where the boat is tied up, and they're a little bit of a distance away, and it's covered in ants, these big ants, and they're making their way to the boat. Well, Dan's like, that's my boat. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, this is his life. You know, everything he's got is in this boat. He's left his assistant on the boat to look after it. And he's worried about him, so he throws off his shoes and dives into the water and swims out to the boat just as the ants are getting there. He's battling the ants off with a fire axe, and then he realizes, you know, they're outnumbered. There's no way. And one of the ants gets his assistant. We don't even know who the guy is. we see him briefly in the beginning, and then we see his death, and that's it. We don't even know what his name is. So Dan, there's two big 5 gallon cans of gasoline that he has for the boat. He uses the axe to bust them open, gas all over the place, grabs a flare gun, and just before he dives off the boat, sets it on fire, and that burns up the ant that's on the boat, and he keeps the others away as he swims back to where the other folks are at. So now they're stuck. What are they going to do? Well, they're not on an island. Fortunately, it's not an island. But they are in the Everglades. They got to figure out which way to, you know, head inland and see if they can find a little town or something or some people somewhere where they can get some help. So on they go. Now, some of them get a little, fall behind a little bit, like Harry and Irene. Harry and Velma. I want to call Velma by her real name, Irene. You know, they can't keep up. So they shoot off to the side. And as you know, in these movies, you never want to do that. You never want to split off from the main group, you know, because that's your death sentence. And they find a little shack that they hole up in there. You know, Harry says, we'll be okay. We'll be safe in there. We'll be safe in there until somebody can come find us. Basically, people just start now getting knocked off one by one. Larry and Christine, his quote unquote wife, they're falling back behind the pack. Christine trips over this fallen big log that's fallen and either sprains her ankle or twists it where she can't get up. And as Larry looks back, here come the ants right on their trail. And what does he do? See ya. Takes off. And so Christine is our next victim and she's gone. That's the one I was telling you about. She didn't fare too well in this one. Larry just, you know, bolts into high gear. They're all heading for a boat that Marilyn knows that the workmen had parked on this river that's nearby, if they can make it to it. So that's where everyone's heading. And Larry catches up with them and says, you know, and Dan says, you know, where's Christine? He says, she didn't make it. Just sort of, nope, she didn't make it. Nope, didn't make it. What did you want me to do? You know, what was I supposed to do? And of course, you know, like any guilty person, you know, he shows his guilt to everybody by constantly saying, you know, well, I did everything I could and all that. And you know that everybody there knows and he knows that they're thinking, yeah, he left her there. So needless to say, the boat is attacked and they lose the boat. So now they're ending up on foot trying to find some vestige of society where they can get some help. Again, folks, like I said, I'm skimming over this. But the one good thing, the one thing that actually almost drew a cheer from the audience in the first showing of this that I was at, was when Larry, as the boat is getting capsized, gets nailed by an ant and eaten up. So it's almost like, yeah, if somebody needed to get killed by an ant in this movie, it was Larry Graham. Well, they find an old couple, and I'm going to, this is the guy I've been saving till the last. The old couple, I don't know the wife. I couldn't find anything on who she was, but Tom Fadden plays this old farmer. They've got this farm, in a little farm out in the middle of nowhere. Of course, here comes the gang up and they said, there's these giant ants. I know you're not going to believe it, but they're chasing us, you know, but we need some help. And, he plays Sam Russell and he goes, his wife's name is Phoebe. He says, Phoebe, go call the sheriff. Go call the sheriff. And the only reason I saved him to the end is Tom Fadden, you're going to recognize. If you're a fan of one of my favorite television shows growing up, can you guess what television show that would be? That would be The Adventures of Superman. Because Tom Fadden played Eben Kent. They had to use the word, they had to change his name to Eben. He couldn't be Jonathan because Siegel and Schuster wouldn't give him permission to use that name, so they used Eben. But he played Clark Kent's father in the premiere episode of The Adventures of Superman on Earth. And he was always a favorite of mine. He would show up, and he shows up all over the place and little jump-in roles in films and television. He was around for a long, long time. Very likable actor. And he always played, you know, characters like this. He made his start in the 20s. So, I mean, you know, he was back, you know, a long, long time back. He was on vaudeville, did a lot of stage work. That's how he got his career started, like everybody else. But, you know, so he did appearances in silent films and then, you know, films in the late 20s and worked with some big people, you know, worked with Humphrey Bogart and others like that. So, you know, he had quite a good career for many, many years. But I got the biggest kick when I saw him in this film. I remember in the theater going, oh my God, that's a guy from Superman. Oh, geez. So now the film is going to take a very strange turn because they get in touch with the sheriff. You know, and I'm thinking, boy, not much in this movie has gone by and they're being rescued. Wow. Yeah. It didn't occur to me that maybe there was something else getting ready to happen. And boy, did it. The sheriff drives them into this little town And this town happens to be, the only thing that's keeping this town going is a big sugar refinery that they pass. Yeah, sugar, ants. Mm-hmm. Gets them set up in a motel. Says, you know, just you get rested. We'll get you fixed up and all of that. I'm going to take all the deputies and we're going to go back to where you just came from and search the place and see if we can find these ants and take care of them. Don't worry. Don't you worry. You just get rested up. Well, Dan wants to find a car. He wants to rent a car. Yes. The mayor who runs the motel says, yeah, there's a place down the street there that'll rent you a car because he just wants to get out of there. And, Joe says, hey, look, I know somebody in the Capitol. Let me make a call. He gets on the pay telephone, tries to make a long distance call, but he can't get a line out. The operator keeps saying there's no lines. The lines are down. There was a storm the night before. Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff that happened. There was a big thunderstorm that happened while they were trying to escape the ants. See, I want you to watch this movie because it's a fun movie. So there's a lot I haven't told you about. But they realized that the mayor was lying because he was on a long distance call when they got to the motel. And then they see some deputies going into the police station. And Dan says, hey, they've been lying to us. You know, they're not going to look. There's something weird going on. So they steal a car. They find a car that's parked on a side street. They hotwire it and they take off. But unfortunately, just as they get out of town, there's a roadblock. You know, the sheriff's got all the roads blocked. They start firing on them and the car crashes into a river. And they all climb out and the sheriff says, we didn't want to do it this way. But you're doing it the hard way. And they takes them to the sugar refinery. And guess what we find at the sugar refinery? The big ants. Not only the big ants, but the queen. And now this is where Bert can say that this is sort of based on H.G. Wells' story, Empire of the Ants. It has nothing to do with the story. In that story, it was about a man on a ship that goes down and tries to save some folks in a Brazilian town that is overrun by giant ants. But in this one, we've got the ants have taken over the sugar refinery. And through the pheromones that the queen gives off, has got all of these people in this town catering to her every whim, taking care of her, making sure all the ants are fed and all that. And in return for that, you know, they're not going to get killed. They're not going to get, you know, destroyed by the ants. Because, you know, as any scientist would tell you, if the insects ever got to the point where they tried to take over the world, they probably could do it. You know, we were so outnumbered, especially insects this size. So now we got this situation, you know, the sheriff's in on it. Everybody's in on it. We got this line of people that every so often they have to get re-hit with the pheromones. So they stay hypnotized and they're just doing fine. The sheriff says, nothing to worry about. We're not going to hurt you. You'll see how right we are, that this is a great thing's going on here. She takes care of us, but she needs us too. So it's a great relationship. And it's like, oh my God, this is slave labor type thing. So it was like, believe me, when I first saw this movie, I never saw that coming at all. And I'm very glad that this came out in a time where you didn't spoil movies for people. Thank God the internet wasn't around in 77. So, you know, this film had been out a while when I went and saw it, and luckily nobody had spoiled it for me. So that was quite a shock. That is the big spoiler on this. And I probably should have warned folks that if they didn't want it to get spoiled, well, you guys know I spoil everything in these podcasts. Needless to say, Dan, when they were in the stolen car, had found some flares, and he kept them, thought that might come in handy, some road flares. He uses that to attack the queen. The queen sends out pheromones for the ants to start attacking everybody at the sugar plant. Dan gets the others that are still alive to take off with him. Now, I should tell you that Joan Collins' character, Marilyn, she's one that she's such a sleazeball in this. You figure, oh, she might be one that you want to see get, you know, nailed by the ants. No, but she gets hypnotized by the ants. She does have to get, you know, she gets hit by the pheromones before the others do and is under their control now. Once the queen is in trouble, all of a sudden the others start waking up to what's going on. And you know, even the sheriff starts shooting at the queen. Now, you're just shocked at what he's been doing all this time. Joe splits off from Dan and the others. He tells them, take the girls. There's only two girls left now. You know, we've got Corrine and we got Margaret. That's it. And Dan. And Joe sees a big fuel tanker parked by the, conveniently parked by the sugar refinery. He's able to open up the valves and circle the plant a couple of times, getting a nice load of gas, to surround the plant, and then runs the tanker right into the refinery where it blows up. Now he jumps out at the last minute and is able to get out before the ring of fire gets lit. But that traps all the ants and burns them all up along with the queen, and makes it back just in time to the boat, a boat that Dan has found down at the dock by this sugar refinery, that is on one of the big rivers that will get them back out into the ocean where they can get back to safety. And the film ends there as they are on the boat, this little boat, on their way to safety, leaving it to us to decide, gee, I wonder what happened with these ants in the Everglades, or are they still there? Who knows? Sort of left up in the air like Food of the Gods was. Empire of the Ants. Folks, this is so much fun. So much fun that, like I said, you know, this is a typical Burt Gordon film that, like a kid. And again, I was out of college when I saw this, just out of college. And I loved this film. I had more fun with it, and I have more fun with it every time I see it. And when I went back to school 2 years later, the guys that I knew, you know, that we would stay up watching CBS late night in the dormitory, all that, you know, they would call and say, hey, Empire of the Ants is on tonight. You know, wow, you know, it was just a popular film on CBS late night. And I wish I could find some records of how many times it ran on that show, but it ran a lot. So 1977, Empire of the Ants. Check it out, folks. You'll have a blast. Now, if you want to see it for free, I mean, there are some streaming services that have it, but unfortunately, Prime and some of those are going to charge you like $3 or $4 to see it. But Plex has it for free if you can handle commercials. And their commercials are not too invasive, so if you want to see it for free, Plex has got it on their on-demand list. So that's a good way to find it. Although, I mean, this film was released, on VHS, on Blu-ray, on DVD. You know, it's been part of some collections, some Burt I. Gordon collections. So it's easy to find, but check it out. Have some fun with it. Pop up a lot of, that's what I did. I popped up a lot of popcorn and planted myself in front of the set for an hour and a half and just had a lot of fun with Empire of the Ants. You'll get a real big kick out of it. Hey, folks, we'll be back with you again next week with an all-new episode of Monster Attack. Madeline Brumby and Shane Morton will be with us on our next episode. I'm going to tease you a little bit on what it's about, but it is dealing with one of my favorite cult film directors. I'll leave you with that one, and join us next Monday for an all-new episode with Madeline and Shane on board as my special co-hosts on Monster Attack. Have a great week, folks, and we will see you on Monday.
After a long wait, new Doctor Who is on its way. We're gearing up to celebrate the 60th anniversary of the show with a brand new Doctor. Let's welcome Shuti Gatwa as the 14th Doctor.
No. Shuti is the 15th Doctor. David Tennant is the 14th Doctor.
Wait. I thought David Tennant was the 10th Doctor. Okay, I'm confused.
Confused? Well, your friends here at the Earth Station Who podcast are here to help you through all your Doctor Who questions. Check us out wherever fine podcasts are found.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.